That's what she said.
That's what she said.
That's what she said.
That's what she said. Well, that's what she said.
Hey, welcome to the latest episode of That's What She Said with Sarah Spain. Good one today, and we've got two guests, so I want to get right into it. We'll do a little Chicago past and present with Jeremy Roenick, formerly of the Blackhawks and multiple other NHL teams, and Chicago Bears rookie running back Jordan Howard. So let's get right to those conversations.
That's what she said.
Happy to be joined now by my buddy, JR. He played for the Blackhawks, Coyotes, Flyers, Kings, Sharks, 18 years in the NHL, Olympian, nine-time All-Star, one of the greatest American-born players of all time, and now he's just one of us media schmoes on the other side of the camera. So let's start back in the beginning. When you were just a kid, you were drafted by the Blackhawks. You came to Chicago. And I remember once you told a great story about sort of wandering around the old Chicago stadium, maybe not the best of neighborhoods, one of your first days here. Tell me that story.
First day, we were leaving the arena, my agent and I, and we were carless, so we had to take a cab. Unfortunately, it was 6 o'clock at night on the west side of Chicago where cabs refused to come and pick up people because it was such a tough neighborhood. So we're out there and we're dressed in suits. My agent has his briefcase with my $50,000 signing bonus in it that I just signed. And we had two guys that pretty much came up to us and said that they were going to rob us if we were out there for any more than 5 minutes. And that the guy coming down the street would probably do worse. So my agent ran into the street, stopped the CTA bus while it was in full flight, and we paid the driver $100 to drive us right into the loop before
any more trouble. Yeah, welcome to Chicago, right? You're like just wandering around, and at least they warned you. If you stick around, we're going to rob you. Not we are currently robbing you.
they were very pleasant thieves. Yes, very considerate.
Yeah, and you have some good stories about, you know, the early years in Chicago. I remember you told me about going to Excalibur nightclub and getting snuck in the back door because you weren't quite 21 yet, already with your wife. And that's what I want to talk about. So you met your wife when you were 13 years old. You're past 25 plus years married now. And people change so much in their teens, in their 30s, 40s. What's the secret that's kept you guys together?
That's a tough question. I think it's We're very lucky in an aspect where we have very similar desires, very similar needs, very similar, I think, hobbies and things that we like to do. But we try. We work hard. We enjoy being with each other. And I think playing in the National Hockey League, although it is, there are so many distractions and things and trouble and people pulling at you, there are also you also have the ability to be separate in a way and have that you know, have that separation to where you want to be together in the summer times. And I also have a very, very strong mental, physical, bond with my wife. She can take a lot. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, and I say that in the news, in the mental side of being married to a professional athlete. She's very durable, and she lays the law down and lets you know what she can take and what she can't. And she's a tremendous woman.
Yeah, I'm just so impressed with that because I love the idea of you guys going from being kids and kind of sneaking into the back of a club and getting that first taste of what being adult is like. Yep. And then all these years later still, you know, going on vacations together and having this great life, having kids together. I can't think of anybody from when I was, you know, 13 years old that I would still want to be married to. So you're lucky. It's pretty amazing.
We're very few of the percentage of people that could make it. So we're very fortunate about that.
So I mentioned your many different stops, obviously the Blackhawks, the first. And I think a lot of people still think of you first and foremost as a Blackhawks player. And I think you have this very special connection. And when they won their first cup in 50 plus years, you were on camera sort of openly crying and you were emotional. It's tough for you to put into words what it meant to you. How much of that was, I'm so excited that this franchise that meant so much to me has gotten over the hump, and how much of it was, I wish I could have been there and had this happen when I was playing?
Well, I think a vast majority of both. there's one thing to be so passionate about the city you play for and the fans and the jersey that you pull or the sweater that you pull over your head every night, and you spill blood on it, you sweat in it, you put your life in your hands pretty much every night, your physical well-being every night, and you do it for a trophy, right? I mean, obviously we get paid very well, but the ultimate goal is to win a championship for your team.
Yeah.
And that's what sports is all about. And when you don't have that experience of winning it and knowing what it feels like and then seeing it and seeing other people that have achieved it in the same sweater, I mean, it's an amazing, overbearing feeling that consumes you, and it consumed me. And I did as much as I could to hold back. And, you know, I probably would have done it too if it was the Flyers, because I put the same kind of passion into the Flyers uniform.
Right.
But I think that's what sports and athletes have to be, is more, I think, compassionate and passionate about the cities and the people that come to watch you play every night. And you celebrate as a city. You don't just celebrate as a team. And you know, I saw it happen.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. You know, you played in a time where there was a tremendous amount of attention paid to athletes, but it wasn't nearly the way it is now, whether that's social media or 24-hour sports networks or whatever else. So athletes were more idolized because they didn't feel as human, but also it feels like athletes have changed as a result, and that there are fewer guys now that you believe are in it as much to win as they are to get that next contract and to get a life that's easier.
No question. And I think the perfect words to have it is that we were idolized, but not as much scrutinized.
Yeah.
And, you know, today with social media, with Twitter, with Instagram, with Snapchat, it's given a platform for people to impose their anger, impose their jealousy, to impose their hate, or impose their gratification. And unfortunately, sometimes for a lot of people, the bad stuff goes through Twitter and pictures and bad things. Athletes today have to be very, very careful with what they are doing on a day-to-day basis. We don't have to even talk about the examples. It's prevalent and it's everywhere. So it's a different time, but still the athletes are athletes, and they're still pretty revered.
Yeah, it's pretty funny when you think about those days. You were, you know, one of the big names in town, although the Blackhawks, due to a lot of reasons that we don't need to get into, were not quite the incredible draw that they are now, in part because of the way the team was run. But you still were a huge name in Chicago. You were a huge draw right around the same time as Jordan was, you know, peaking. Are there any great stories from those days that when people say, oh, well, Michael Jordan would be in a lot of trouble if there was social media around back then? Are there stories that immediately pop into your head of nights out in Chicago with other pros that you're lucky there were no smartphones?
Well, Chris Chelios and I used to go to Bulls games and sit behind the net right at the top of the staircase where we would come out from our locker room.
Yeah.
And we would watch the games, and then we would wait for Dennis Rodman and Ronnie Harper to come on up, and then, you know, we would jet off to Benihana and would love to throw down bottles of sake and then head to the different establishments along the route. So
spend
many hours at the whiskey bar, you know, right there on Chicago Avenue. And yeah, there's a lot of stories. You already told the ones about sneaking into the back of Excalibur, and you know, they were nice enough to make sure that I got in at underage. But you know, those are the good days, but also the days that you know, you had to watch yourself. There's no question. I was a little guy in a big city, you know, new kid. So
And you started out so young. You had to learn some stuff that you're lucky you learned on your own without everyone watching.
I did.
You and I have partied together.
Those long days in the lodge, we still have them.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. You're still doing it because you and I have partied together at the lodge and some spots on Division.
Yes,
and
we have.
What do you think's the drunkest Jeremy Roenick has ever been in his life?
Jeez. Oh man, that's a good question. I don't really know. I wrote in my book I wrote in my book how I climbed out of a limousine outside of the sky. What is it? The
sunroof?
The sunroof, going 65, 70 miles an hour down the 55. Yeah, and knocked on the windshield of the car.
Yikes.
Full flight. Probably not a smart thing to do at 24 years old.
Yeah, but, no doubt.
You know, things you do when you're young and things you how stupid you feel, you know, once you get older and realize what you've done.
Yeah, but if you're older, that means you live through it to look back and then you can say, how did I survive that? You know, obviously the famous swinger scene, we've talked about it. The line, you know, it's not so much me, it's Ronick, he's good. And then Vince Vaughn named his character in Wedding Crashers, Jeremy. You guys are friends. He's a big, you know, fan of yours. Have you had crazy nights on the town with Vince Vaughn, or is now that he's an old married guy, he's settled down?
I haven't had many nights out in the town with him, but I've been with him a few times and been out to dinner with him in L.A. He's a tremendous guy and a big supporter of mine, as I am of his, and you know, it's just really nice when people from other professions that you look up to also look up to you. It's really a cool dynamic.
Yeah, and he's a legit fan, which sometimes there's the ones who seem to be
legit
a little bit posers,
fan.
But he's legit.
Absolutely.
So I remember when you were with the Sharks, we went out to dinner with Doug Wilson, who was your former roommate in Chicago with the Blackhawks and was then your GM. So you were still out there on the ice working every day while a lot of your peers had gotten into the front office. Knowing what you know from that time in your life, what do you make of Jaromir Jagr still doing it right now and how well he's doing?
The guy's a freak.
Yeah.
He's an absolute freak. He's a freak of nature. For him to be able to do the things that he's been able to do for 27 years, pretty much, 26 years, it totally defies the laws of aging, right? I mean, I've seen him do 1,000 one-legged lunges out of a pool.
Wow.
Per leg per day. 1,000 per leg per day. And this is at 44, 43 years old. So his commitment to the game is immense. His ability to love the game as much as he has is uncanny. I mean, 1,900 points, and he literally has missed 5 years of NHL playing. If you talk about the 3 years he went to the KHL and then a few lockouts that he had to go through, this guy missed 5 years and still he's a second all-time scorer in NHL history. It just boggles my mind.
Who you got in a cage match at 45 years old? 45-year-old Jagr or 45-year-old Chelios? And
Chelios.
I know he's your buddy, but
I'll take a 54-year-old Chelios.
What?
Now. Absolutely.
He's still
Chelly's
got it.
Better shape than Chelly's in better shape than most of the NHL players still right now. He's sick.
Craziness. Absolutely crazy.
Yep.
So tell me, what's this Kraft Hockeyville thing you're working on?
Yeah, so this is the third year for Kraft Hockeyville. I'm very proud to be the voice of and the spokesperson for Kraft Hockeyville. So between NHL, NBC, USA Hockey, and Kraft, our program going out to find the most passionate hockey community in America. Johnstown was the first winner a couple years ago. Last year was Marquette, Michigan. This year, number three will be crowned, and we're looking for people out there across the country to write in, to tell us your stories, tell us about your arena, tell us about your teams, maybe something special about where you live and why your community is so passionate about hockey. And you can go to KraftHockeyville.com to submit your entry for your community. Tell us your story. Tell us why you should be Kraft Hockeyville, crown the Kraft Hockeyville winners this year. Or you can go on Facebook and Twitter, and you'll find it, hashtag HockeyvilleUSA. Those are the best ways that you can get involved. And hopefully you could be the winner this year of Kraft Hockeyville and have the chance to win $150,000. For your neighborhood arena, you know, to maybe for new ice or some new locker rooms to make your arena look new and better, and the winning community will also host an NHL preseason game that will be aired on NBC Sports Network, where myself and Pierre and Doc will be there to celebrate your win as Kraft Hockeyville USA. And have up until March. You have up until March 10th to sign up. So everybody out there, get your pens out, get your on your laptop, and write us a letter. Let us know why your community is deserving of being this year's Kraft Hockeyville winner. And we'll see you in September or October for a preseason game. Kraft Hockeyville has been so good at supporting local hockey all across the country. 82 communities have benefited over $3 million,
over $3 million
over the last couple of years. So it's a great event, Sarah. It's a great program, and I appreciate you letting me boast about it.
Yeah, for sure. That's awesome. I just like anything that isn't talking about Detroit being hockey town, because we're trying to steal that away from him here in Chicago with our run the last couple of years.
You have a pretty good debate right there.
Yeah, yeah. Before we let you go, I wish we could talk, and we'll have to have you on again when you've got more time, but you first have to do the one thing that every guest does on That's What She Said.
Didn't expect a kind of Spanish Inquisition. Nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition.
That's right. It's the Spanish Inquisition, the questions that I ask every guest. So, number one, what's the natural talent you wish you were gifted with?
The natural talent that I wish I was gifted with would probably be, I wish I could hit a ball like Rory McIlroy.
Oh, yeah. You're a big golfer, though. You want to be
a
pro. Yeah.
But I would like to hit it like Rory McIlroy.
Number two, what's your desert island album? You can only have one.
My desert island album?
Yeah, if you were stuck on a desert island, you could only have one album.
Yeah, it would be The Best of the Eagles.
Ah.
Eagles fan.
Okay,
yep.
Nice.
For that forever.
Number three, if you could switch lives with someone for one day, who would it be?
Justin Timberlake.
Oh, love that. And then I would be trying to hang out with you if you were Justin Timberlake, wherever you went, because I have a little stalker in me for that guy. Well, I do like to hang out with you anyway. You're right. But if you were JT, it'd be even cooler. Number four, what's the most scared you've ever been?
What was the most scared I've ever been? Wow. That's a tough one. I think when my daughter was in the hospital, she had a liver condition that only 25% of her liver was working at Christmas time.
Oh, wow.
I think it was in 2004, and that was 2005. That was a scary one for me.
But she's good now.
She's good now. Yes,
good.
Thank goodness.
Number five, what habit or quality do you think has contributed most to your success?
My hatred of losing. My competitiveness.
Competitiveness
sometimes is also my deterrent. So,
you're competitive about everything. When you got on that workout kick last year or the year before and you were like, 0% body fat, you just choose something and you're like, all right, I'm going to beat this.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'll compete. I will compete hard to win anything, and I don't care what it is.
I'm the same. It can be embarrassing sometimes. People are like, settle down.
Okay. Yeah.
You're just playing darts in a bar. I'm like, no, I have to win, though.
That's right.
Number six, what's the thing about yourself you'd most like to improve?
Plan my time. I don't have any time, but I am constantly on the road, and unfortunately I forget about the important people that I need to show some attention to. So
right. Time management.
Time management is a bad thing for me.
And finally, what three words would you hope people use to describe you?
Probably I'd want to be known as a warrior.
Mm-hmm.
I would want to be known as a very giving person, a compassionate person.
Mm-hmm.
And I want people to know that I truly love people. I'm a lover. There's no question about it. 100%.
I love that. A compassionate, loving warrior. It's a good dichotomy there.
I can throw you around any way you want.
I love that. I love talking to you, JR. We're going to have you on again when you got more time. And hopefully the Blackhawks will make a deep run so we can hang at the lodge a few more times.
Thanks,
talk
Sarah.
To you
love
soon,
you.
JR.
Can't wait to see you in Chicago.
Well, that's what she said.
That's what she said.
Happy now to be joined by the second leader in rushing yards in the NFL, behind only Ezekiel Elliott. And it's crazy to me that you get to the NFL, you're drafted by the Bears in the fifth round, you start the season as the third running back, and you end the season in the Pro Bowl. So did you surprise even yourself with how well you did?
I surprised myself with kind of how well I did, because I knew I had the ability to do that well, but I just didn't think I was going to have the opportunities to do that well.
So you've always sort of been the underdog, right? So what was it between high school, when you were not heavily recruited, and college that caused you to take that giant leap from a good player to one that was setting school records at UAB?
I just felt like at first I kind of doubted myself, because I didn't really have any offers coming out of high school. So I was like, maybe I'm not as good as I think I am. And then my freshman year, I started playing. And I started having success. And then that's when I realized I'm really as good as I think I am. People just overlooked me. So just play with a chip on my shoulder.
Yeah, so you get to UAB. You're having great success. And then the football program gets dissolved. What are you thinking in that moment about the future of your football career?
I'm thinking my football career is going to continue, but I'm just heartbroken right now because I don't know where I'm going to go. I really didn't want to leave, but I had to just put my emotions to the side and talk to schools. Like, some of the schools, like, I was trying to talk to them out of high school. I couldn't even get a response back from them, and so I had to talk to them, put my pride to the side. But so it was kind of crazy.
Yeah, so these are guys that weren't interested in you before, wouldn't return your calls. Now you've got some collegiate efforts under your belt. You're actually doing quite well. How was the response different when you came around a second time?
I mean, it was a lot different. I actually, because coming out of high school, I only took one official visit. So I took three official visits when I was trying to decide what school I wanted to go to. But it was just crazy. All the schools were just hitting me up, trying to get me to come here and trying to get me to come there.
Yeah, because you proved yourself. You only got one scholarship offer coming out of high school, and that was to UAB. Do you ever think how differently things could have gone for you if it had been just a year or two difference and the football program didn't exist when you were coming out of high school? Because that's the only place you got the offer.
Yeah, that would have been pretty crazy. I don't know what I would have done. I probably would have just ended up going to try to a junior college and trying to prove myself and trying to get a bigger school to look at me.
So there was never a thought in your head of, I'm only getting one scholarship offer, or the schools that I want to go to aren't interested, so maybe this isn't for me, I should quit?
No, there was never any thoughts like that. I just felt like I'm just going to have to make a way, whatever I have. I'm just going to have to play with the cards that I have.
So you get into the NFL, and like I said, second most rushing yards behind only fellow rookie Ezekiel Elliott. You're in the Pro Bowl. You've always been this underdog story, but now, can you even be an underdog anymore after you have a season like that?
I mean, I still feel like I'm kind of underdog, because I was kind of overshadowed by Ezekiel Elliott and Dak Prescott, because they had great rookie seasons as well, so I was pretty overshadowed. And then I know a lot of people are just going to be expecting big things from me next season, so I just got to come out and prove myself again.
You know, Matt Forte was such a huge part of the Bears. I remember, I never forget this stat. There was one season where he was over 33% of the entire offense. You know, catching passes and rushing yards and everything else, and a real leader for the team. How much pressure did you feel? You know, starting the season, you were third running back, so you weren't necessarily the heir apparent. But now you are officially the guy that everyone is going to expect to fill a role that Matt Forte handled so well. What kind of pressure is that for you?
I don't really feel like there's any pressure, because I've always wanted to be the guy. That's what I've been most of my career. So I'm just going to be nothing new for me. So I just got to take it in stride and just keep working hard.
Who puts the most pressure on you? Is there someone else, a coach, a family member, a friend?
I put the most pressure on myself.
Really?
I'm tough on myself. I'm a tough grade on myself. So even if the coach says I did something well, I feel like there's something I could have did a little bit better.
Is there a coach on this Bears staff that you're closest with?
Not anymore, because we had so much turnover. My running back coach, he left, so we had so much turnover, so we have a lot of new additions.
So you got some friend making to do.
Yeah, definitely.
Make sure you're still top of that depth chart when the new guys come in, right? You could be the underdog again. We never know. I don't think so after a season like last year. So it's tough, I think, as a rookie probably to balance the excitement of, oh my gosh, I'm in the pros, this is so exciting, with, oh my gosh, my team has three wins, right? So you're so super excited for personal success, but how tough is it to join a team that's going through this rough patch?
It's very tough, because you always want to win. Nobody likes losing, and losing is just hard, especially when we lose so many close games that we had a chance to win. So that was very tough, but I feel like it's going to go well for us the next few years, because we have so many young guys playing, so we're going to be battle tested and we're going to have experience, so we're going to know what to do when that time comes next year.
And so many injuries too. So then there's this very unique relationship for a running back between running back and a quarterback, running back and an offensive line, and there's so much turnover because of injuries. So do you feel like you could have maybe even had a better season this year if there had been more consistency there?
I feel like I might have could have had a better season. Could have got a few more touches because a lot of times we were down in the second half, so we couldn't really run the ball. So I felt like they kind of helped stunt like some of my stats and some of my growth.
Yeah, absolutely. When you were drafted by the Bears, what was the first thing you thought?
I was just excited to be drafted because I thought I was going to be drafted a lot sooner than I was. So mm-hmm. I was angry and happy at the same time, but I was just very grateful that somebody had finally selected me.
Yeah, you had the third best stats, I think, of all the running backs in the draft heading into the first round, and you fall to the fifth round. So you went to Indiana after UAB, so at least you kind of understand. I imagine you've been to Chicago a time or two?
No, this is my first time
really?
In Chicago when I got drafted.
Okay, so tell me what you thought Chicago was about when you first got drafted. What was the first things that popped into your head?
I was just thinking like the big city life. I thought we were going to be like downtown and things like that, but I got a shock when I got up here.
Yeah, because you're actually in Lake Forest, which is about 45 minutes north, which is actually where I grew up, so I know it very well. That's my hood. So are you living in the burbs then?
Yeah, I'm living in Deerfield.
Right, so you're living in the burbs, you're practicing in the burbs, and then you come downtown just for the game. Yeah, so it's really only, not the big city
time,
living.
That's the only time I make it downtown for the games.
Which I guess means you're at Tsukasa like every night.
Yes,
that's the best. That is the shit. Like I try to go back there when I'm in town for whatever excuse I have to go up north, I make sure I get to Tsukasa. And I've heard it's like the Bears spot, right?
I haven't checked it out yet, but I need to.
You haven't been?
I haven't been.
What are you doing with your life?
I don't know.
Man, come on, dude. It is so good. They make a train out of onions, choo-choo, and then the steam comes out of the top. It's delicious. So who's the guy or the guys, maybe, in the locker room that kind of kept spirits up this year when things weren't going well?
I might just say everybody. Sam Macho, he does a great job. Pernell McPhee, always just telling how we were so close to so many games. He's just telling us keep fighting because some of the players on our team, they won Super Bowls. He won a Super Bowl, so he knows what it takes to get to there. So he just tells us just to keep fighting.
And what does it mean to you guys if you hear outside noise of either fans or media members saying that they want you to tank for a better draft pick? Do you guys sometimes in your head think, listen, I don't want to go through this kind of season again, so I would rather lose and make things better?
Nah, you never think about it like that. You always just go out and try to get your best effort because we could have went out against San Fran and laid flat and lost to them and had a better pick than we have now. But you never think about it. You just always want to go out and give your best effort.
Well, and it's so hard because individually you have to play well to keep that spot. So you can't just sing. You can't decide I'm going to tank, but hey, coach, I'm actually much better than this. I'm just not trying because I want us to get a better draft pick, right?
Yeah, you always want to put your best effort on film because, like they tell us all the time, you're not just playing. He's not putting film on for the team that you're on, but for every other team in the NFL.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of pride, too. If you're going to be a guy that can make it this far, mm-hmm. you're probably pretty competitive, and you're probably pretty prideful about your efforts. So there's rumors right now swirling about a trade for Cutler or maybe just getting waived, maybe even early retirement if he doesn't find a good fit. How much do you pay attention to the rumors that go on in the offseason, so personnel changes, coaches, players, otherwise?
We can't really pay attention to rumors because they're just rumors so far, so can't really worry about things like that. But we definitely had a lot of coaching changes. I think we have like five new coaches on the staff now.
Yeah, so what's your approach to a new coach? Just let everything kind of hang and wait and see, or do you try to reach out and figure out what their vibe is?
I'm a laid back guy, so I have to warm up to people, so I just take my time and just get used to them. But I'm used to having a new coach. This is gonna be my fifth running back coach since I entered college. I had a different running back coach every year, so it's nothing new to me really.
What do you make of the criticism of John Fox? People saying that he, you know, I've heard from people that the first year he really thought he was inheriting a more talented team. He really didn't understand kind of the mess that Trestman had left him. And then now, a couple years in, people just aren't sure if he's really motivated anymore, if maybe this is sort of the last little stretch run for him. What's your relationship with him like?
My relationship with Coach Fox is pretty great. Everybody loves Coach Fox. He's always positive, always upbeat, always joking around. You never see him down. And he's just always upbeat. I feel like he got a bad shake this year with all the injuries we had. So we were forced to play a lot of people who didn't have experience. So that was pretty tough.
It's interesting because we don't see a lot of that jovial joking around side. We get a lot of mumbling, and I mean it was a tough year, right? So we're not going to get a lot of happy press conferences from him. What about Jay Cutler? What was your relationship like with him?
My relationship with Jay was pretty well. I feel like he gets a bad rep as well because some of the how he looks sometimes.
Bitter beer face, yeah. He's got a punchable face sometimes, yeah.
They judge his face sometimes too much, but he's a pretty cool guy. He works hard, goes about his business.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I've always defended Jay on. I mean, he's got his very bad, you know, decision making sometimes, but I thought it was a false criticism that he didn't work hard. You know, he's a guy who seemed to me like he really showed up and when he wasn't injured was willing to work.
Yeah, he definitely works hard. I saw him a few weeks ago. He had shoulder surgery. He was in the weight room working hard. He was working hard to get ready for the next season.
So that's such a big part of any football team, the quarterback position. How difficult is it for you to kind of think in your head about what next season is going to look like and how to prepare yourself for that when you don't know who's going to be at that position?
It's kind of difficult, but you can't worry yourself with it too much because you have to trust in the front office and trust in their decisions that they make the right decisions for the team.
If you could play for any quarterback in the NFL, now this is like totally pie in the sky, doesn't have to be a trade that that team would make, doesn't have to be a guy that anyone would be willing to get rid of, but let's just say you could pick anyone, who would it be?
I guess I had to pick Tom Brady. He's the best in the game right now.
He's pretty good. No Aaron Rodgers? Not with that Packers rivalry, right? So you were here today at the hotel because you were presenting a $10,000 check to the Pulmonary Fibrosis Foundation. And that was in memory of your dad who passed away from PF 10 years ago. You matched the $10,000 in donations you got from fans in your fundraising challenge. The Bears donated some coin to the cause as well. I think some players maybe wait a little bit longer into their career to really dive into charity. They'll do some of the stuff organized by the teams, but maybe not take so much initiative on their own. What made you decide that this early and this soon into your career here in Chicago you wanted to do this?
When I found out that the organization was based in Chicago, I felt like this was just the perfect time. And then with me playing well on the field, getting my name out there as a rookie, I just felt like the time was now. I felt like I was hot, so I should try to raise awareness for the disease while I can.
Yeah, and you were so young when your dad passed away, and I couldn't believe that they were saying today that as many people die per year of PF as breast cancer. It just doesn't get publicity.
Yeah, nobody really talks about that. It gets overshadowed. A lot of diseases get overshadowed by breast cancer.
Yeah, because we have a lot of awareness of that, mm-hmm. but maybe not so much awareness of PF. So I heard there was a shirt that you wear under your uniform for every game since your dad passed?
Yeah, every game since I was playing football in seventh grade. My mom, she brought me a shirt. It had sleeves on it at first, but then we had to cut the sleeves off and put slits inside so I could still wear it.
Yeah, so you have two versions of it, right, though?
I can only use one this year, though.
Yeah. Who's in charge? Do you put it in the laundry with the rest of your stuff? The Bears guys wash it?
I put it on my game loop and they wash it and it's there every Sunday for me.
At some point, are you going to need to make a new version of it? Is it getting pretty gross?
I don't think I need a new version. Yeah, it's dingy looking, but it works for me.
Yeah, you'll wear it even if it's in tatters. It's just underneath,
exactly.
Right? So what do you think your dad would say now after this rookie season?
I feel like he's proud of me. This is all we ever talked about. I wish my dream to... We always talked about how I make it to the NFL, but he just kept me get back to work. What I did the year before doesn't really matter anymore.
It's crazy, though, because you were so young when he passed. And, you know, a lot of kids, I think, talk about wanting to make it to the pros. But at that age, and particularly since coming out of high school, you weren't super heavily mm-hmm. recruited. This was even years before that. So it's crazy that you guys already had that dream. I wonder how surprised he would be. Maybe not surprised. I'm sure he believed in you, but it's a long shot to not get hurt and to make the right decisions and to end up in the right place. So pretty crazy for him to see it all actually work out.
Yeah, it is crazy. My mom, she always tells me that he would tell anybody that he could that I was going to be special. So he always bragged about me. And then I know he wrote me, I think on one of my birthdays, he wrote me a note on the card that said, no matter what, win, lose, or draw, you'll always be the GOAT to me.
And you were how old then?
I don't forget how old I was.
Like, but probably in, like,
probably
9 or 10?
Yeah, 9 or 10. I'll say something like that.
My parents have never called me the GOAT, and I'm older than 9 or 10. So tell me about your goals for next season. After having such a crazy rookie season, what can you expect of yourself?
For myself, I just expect to stay consistent like I usually do. I pride myself on being consistent and bringing my best game every game and just working on little things like better being in better shape, working on catching, looking the ball at when I'm catching. Being a better blogger, just being more knowledgeable.
Alshon Jeffrey inexplicably promising a Super Bowl. I don't think we need to go that far, but what can you tell Bears fans about why we should believe that the team might be on the upswing and headed for better days?
I mean, we have a lot of talent. You saw we were sticking with a lot of teams in a lot of close games, but we just had so many injuries, so we were barely at full strength all year. But we have a lot of talent, so I feel like we can really compete with anybody.
Romo or Garoppolo, if you had a choice?
I'd say Romo since he's more proven.
Right. Get the veteran in there.
Yeah.
All right. So before I let you go, you have to play the game that everybody on my podcast plays.
Didn't expect the kind of Spanish Inquisition. Nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition.
Number one, what's the natural talent you wish you were gifted with?
Singing, definitely.
Are you any good or terrible?
I'm terrible.
Everybody says that one. I think everyone believes that they have like an inner Whitney Houston Adele in them, and they're just wishing it would come out. What's your desert island album? If you got stuck on a desert island, you could only have one album.
One album. It'd probably be Drake, Take Care.
Really? Drake. Okay, so you're going super current, not back to old school.
Yeah.
If you could switch lives with anyone for a day, who would it be?
No one.
No one?
No one.
Just for one day?
No one.
You don't want to know what it's like?
I don't want to be like anybody else.
Why not?
I want to be myself. I'm unique. Everybody's unique in their own way, so I don't want anybody else's life.
You don't even want to know what it's like to be Drake for a day?
No.
President Obama?
No.
A woman?
No.
Don't laugh. Could be awesome. Number four, what's the most scared you've ever been?
Most scared I've ever been. Probably on a roller coaster or something like that.
Yeah, you're not a fan?
Definitely not a fan. I let my agent talk me into getting on the roller coaster when we were at the Pro Bowl. I definitely should have done that.
What was your? Are you more of a silent gasper, or were you screaming like a little boy?
I'm out silent. I have my eyes closed most of the ride, but the picture they took of us, I was looking calm. So
yeah,
looking bad.
You pulled it off. Number five. What habit or quality do you think has most contributed to your success?
Just never being complacent. I feel like if you get complacent, you start being lackadaisical and things like that, and you start easing up.
So just always pushing through. What's the thing about yourself you'd most like to improve?
I feel like I want to be more outgoing. I feel like I'm too reserved and too shy sometimes.
How are you going to fix that?
I don't know. Really just trying to talk to people, just try to be more outgoing.
Who on your team could help you with that?
Probably Josh Bellamy.
Yeah?
Yeah.
He's got a lot of personality. Number seven, what three words would you hope people would use to describe you?
Caring, hardworking, and a leader.
Nice. Those are good words. Your coach would like that answer.
Yeah.
You're now giving me the coach's answer. Well, thanks so much for making time for me, and congrats on your charitable giving. That's awesome.
Thank you.
Oh, and another thing.
So as you're listening to this, we are wrapping up our annual Hear the Cheers campaign. So this is my quick plug to help out. I started this campaign 5 years ago with this girl I mentor from a local high school. She at the time was in junior high when we first met. Now she's a sophomore. And Julie Foudy said that she had an idea for her daughter to help give back to the community. Her daughter had said she wanted to donate her old Barbie dolls to some other kids, and how would she go about doing that? And it made Julie think that she needed to help her understand the benefit of charity and how to give back if you want to, and that it doesn't always have to be this giant campaign for millions of dollars. Sometimes you can make a difference in your community on a really small scale, and it will still affect people. So she asked coworkers to partner up with their daughters and choose something within the neighborhood and be a part of her Choose to Matter campaign. Now, I don't have a daughter, but at the time I was friends with Eliza and her family, my young mentee, and I decided to ask her if she wanted to do something with me and partner up. And Eliza was born with some hearing deficiencies, and she said, let's raise money for other kids who play sports that have hearing impairments. And I did not know at the time that hearing aids for the most part are not covered by insurance, which is absolutely crazy because they cost $5,000 to $6,000 an ear sometimes. So for a family to be struck with the burden of paying $5,000 to $6,000 per ear potentially, just to help their kid be able to perform in class, listen to their teachers and friends, play sports, dance, do whatever, it was really kind of heartbreaking to hear. So for the fifth year in a row, Eliza and I are partnering up, and we do a month-long campaign to raise money for Hear the Cheers, which is a charity that we started breaking off of the Chicago Hearing Society. So if you want to give money and help out some of these kids and also get a chance to win tons of amazing prizes, every $15 you give is another entry into the raffle. We got all sorts of signed Cubs merchandise, Blackhawks stuff, jerseys, bats, baseballs, everything you can imagine. Just go to the Chicago Hearing Society website and then the Hear the Cheers section, or you can just Google Hear the Cheers, Sarah Spain, and you will find it. And would love any help you can give as we're finishing up our campaign. Thanks, as always, for lasting about an hour with me.
That's what she said.